This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. On this week's program, we'll hear from Representatives Jim Bridenstine and Jim Jordan about the high cost of Obamacare and efforts underway to defund it. Also, Bob McGinnis stops by to talk about his latest book on women in combat roles. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins as he gets us started with some information about what's coming up in August.
I'm going to be taking some time off during the month of August, coming up on my 10th anniversary here at the Family Research Council, and members of the board have granted me a sabbatical to go and do some writing. I've got a book I'm working on, so I'm going to be taking off the month while Congress is out of town. And during my absence, we have a very exciting lineup of guest hosts, including my next guest. Congressman Jim Bridenstine is no stranger to this show. Serving in his first term, he represents the 1st Congressional District of Oklahoma, and he made an immediate impact on this city upon his arrival. And with his refreshing brand of principled conservatism, he joins me now to discuss an event that we both participated in on Capitol Hill, and that is the defunding of Obamacare. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Tony, and I appreciate you for allowing me to fill your shoes while you're out of place for a period. And I got to tell you, I don't know if I'll be able to fill them, but I'll do the best I can.
Well, they're actually boots, but I'll leave them here, okay. And I'm sure you can do well. So I just want folks to know that I'm leaving this microphone in conservative hands, and you were one of about four members of the House that joined, I think, three or four senators, along with some of us others, calling on Congress to cut off the funding to Obamacare because of the threat that it poses to our faith, to our families, and to our freedom.
That's right. And, you know, this is one of those issues where you think about the Democrats that are on our team on this. As a member of Congress, I get letters from both Republicans and Democrats. And I get Democrats writing me saying, you know, I didn't vote for you. I'm probably never going to vote for you. But you have got to do something to get rid of Obamacare. This is not an issue that is unique to Republicans. Everybody is feeling the pressure on this. Just the other day, the president of the Teamsters, James Hoffa, said that Obamacare is destroying the 40-hour work week that has been the backbone of the American middle class. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine conservative Republicans and unions coming together to defeat this law, which I think is important to note. Also, Max Baucus, as I'm sure your very well-educated audience is aware, was one of the original authors of Obamacare, and he is calling it a huge train wreck.
Well, you're absolutely right. The wheels are coming off the Obamacare gurney. I mean, yeah. When you've got the labor union leaders against it, you've got key Democrats calling it a train wreck, and the president himself realizing it's not ready for prime time, and he's delaying this, unilaterally delaying the employer mandate. I mean, this thing is it is dangerous. And you're right, the ultimate goal here is to make it go away permanently, drive a stake through the heart of Obamacare. But unfortunately, in this Congress, there's only a couple of ways to end this, and you've got to cut off the funding. You've got to find something that is a must-pass piece of legislation. And so what's on the table here was the continuing resolution, the mechanism by which we're currently funding government, that the monies be taken away from Obamacare, and that everything else that funds government be sent on through to the president to sign, just absent Obamacare.
That sounds reasonable to me.
It's
very reasonable. And here's the thing. Nobody that was there today is advocating for a government shutdown. What we want to do is we want to fund the government with a CR and just have a limitation amendment on the funding of Obamacare itself. And so we want the government to be funded. We just want to limit the funds that are going to Obamacare alone. And if we were to pass that continuing resolution, then we have done our job. We should do that, and then we should all, go on recess. We should adjourn the House of Representatives, and all of us should get out of town and go back to our constituents and talk about why it was important that we funded the government but defunded Obamacare. And then it's over to the president and the Democrats in the Senate to determine, do they want to shut down the government? And I would guess, that when the pressure is on them, they're going to choose not to shut down the government, and we will defund Obamacare. And remember, yeah. this is only a 1 year continuing resolution. So this doesn't get rid of the bill; it just defunds it for a year.
But what's happening is this is moved from being theoretical to the very practical or impractical, where it's being implemented. I've been serving as a transitional pastor at a church, my home church, and I was meeting with the staff that have individual policies, and we were talking about this this week. Before I came here to Washington, and what they said was they just were notified that January 1st, one of them mentioned their premiums, young family, four children, all healthy, no problems. Premiums were going up $330 a month. Americans can afford that?
Well, that's why obviously the Family Research Council, you guys have the best interest of families in mind. Families can't afford this. It is not affordable. And even when you take into account the spike in premium, the spike in premiums is going to be far greater than the subsidies that come from the federal government through the state exchanges. So this is going to be painful for families. It's even more painful for employees. I mean, we have in the month of June, people said that we created 195,000 jobs in June. It's simply not true. We lost, I think it was something like 260,000 full-time jobs, and then the jobs that were added back were all part-time jobs. And so you can say we created over 100,000 jobs, but the reality is we lost full-time jobs and we picked up part-time jobs. This is creating a part-time job economy. And in my district, I hear about it every time I go home. I hear about a business who is hiring only part-time folks, or I'm hearing about an employee who can't find full-time work. It really is becoming right now, people are feeling the effects of this. Businesses are not hiring. When they are hiring, they're hiring part-time. People can't find jobs. The people that have jobs are seeing their premium spike. The businesses can't afford it. And the reality is the most egregious portion of all this is that it's enforced by the IRS. And the IRS has already proven to us that they're incapable of being trusted on very simple things like nonprofit status. And now we're going to trust them with our health care. This is just not a workable law. People don't like it. And if Republicans, this is the challenge that we're going to have. There are Republicans that are nervous that this could be a losing issue for us if we defund Obamacare and the CR. And I would just testify that is absolutely not the case. That we would be heroes. There are Democrats that are looking for us to do something. And, of course, the base of the Republican Party would be energized unlike ever before if they saw us stand up for their values.
So this well, is the bottom this, line. The bottom line is it's the right thing to do.
That's exactly it. You know, somebody was showing me polling about government shutdown this, government shutdown that. We don't want to shut down the government. We want to fund the government. We just want to have a limitation amendment that defunds Obamacare.
Fund it responsibly.
That's correct. And by the way, I also want to be clear. There are a whole lot of things we fund that I'm not, real happy with. But there's a lot of us obviously Ted Cruz was there, and Marco Rubio, and Mike Lee, and every single one of us that was there, we're all saying the same thing. Look, we're willing to reluctantly fund all of the rest of the government. All we're asking for is this one item.
Right.
And I think that's a message that needs to be brought home.
It is. It's a good point, because there's a lot of folks that will vote for this CR that wouldn't normally vote for it simply because it takes care of a huge problem, and that is Obamacare. Congressman, thanks so much for being with us and giving us the insights on Obamacare. And I know our folks are looking forward to hearing from you in a couple weeks as you sit in behind the microphone.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it, Tony.
If you'd like to find out more about Representative Bridenstine's efforts to stop Obamacare, go to TonyPerkins.com. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. We'll be back with more Washington Watch Weekly right after this.
On October the 11th through the 13th, join fellow Americans who want to get our country back on the right course. Come to Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. and stand for faith, family, and freedom. Mike Huckabee, Senator Rand Paul, Rick Santorum, Star Parker, congressional members are already confirmed. Invited speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, Alan West, Governor Jan Brewer, Bobby Jindal, and Scott Walker. Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, Representatives Eric Cantor, Michelle Bachmann, and more. Today's hottest topics will be addressed: religious liberty, protection of life and marriage, government spending, and national security. Register today for just $99 at valuesvotersummit.org. That's valuesvotersummit.org. This October, stand with others who are committed to taking back our country. Go to valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Well, up next, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by Jim Jordan of Ohio as they discuss current efforts to defund Obamacare. Here's Tony as he gives us a little background.
Florida's Insurance Commissioner Kevin McCarty said that individuals will see increases of 30 to 40% in their health care premiums. But you know what? Floridians are not alone. As more and more Americans are becoming aware that the Affordable Health Care Act, or the Affordable Care Act, is anything but affordable, the call for eliminating Obamacare is building. Last week, Congressman Mark Meadows joined us to discuss a letter that he had written and circulated to go to House Speaker John Boehner, asking for him to defund Obamacare in the upcoming continuing resolution. Well, now over 60 Republicans have signed on in support of that effort. Joining me now is one of the signers and one of those pushing strongly to defund Obamacare is Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio's 4th Congressional District. Congressman Jordan serves on the Judiciary and Oversight and Government Reform Committees. He is also the former chairman of the Republican Study Committee, and he's a true blue conservative through and through. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Well, give us an update on the effort among conservatives there to push for a defunding of Obamacare.
So, first of all, I can't believe costs are going up. Didn't the president tell us that if Obamacare became the law, everyone would be covered and costs would go down? How can this be happening?
Well, exactly, and I'm sure you're getting those calls to your office, becoming real.
I hear from businesses all the time. They're like, Jim, my rates just went up. I had a business guy in Ohio, and he has younger, he's an electrical contractor, younger guys who are electricians working for him, just went up 30%. And so we're seeing this all over the place. We all said this law was not good. Whenever you have a big centralized approach to something, particularly at the federal government level, it typically drives up the cost and skews the market even more than it already was. So we are seeing that firsthand. It's why we have to stop this law. And, you know, I've been telling everyone gets it. Majority of Americans still understand that Obamacare is bad for the country. Business owners understand it. People who are working, particularly in the fast food and industry, who are now, their employers telling them, you know what, you can't work more than 30 hours a week because of this, the way this law is and what it's going to cost and what it's going to mean to our, they're seeing it firsthand. Max Baucus, Democrat senator, who helped write the law, has called it a train wreck. Even Jimmy Hoffa with the labor union say this thing is a problem. And, of course, the guy who it's named after, the president himself, has said it's not ready. It's not ready for prime time, so much so that he's willing to waive the employer mandate. And yet they still want to push this on the American people. That's why we have to stop it.
Well, Congressman Jordan, has not the president opened the door then by delaying the mandate on employers? I mean, how can you these increased costs that we're seeing reported like out of Florida and elsewhere are on the individuals? So what you're going to do is you're going to shift the burden to the individuals.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. The president has opened the door, and that's why we need to delay the whole thing. And chip away at this thing and ultimately stop it. The other thing we forgot to mention in our list, Tony, and this is the biggest, the very agency charged with enforcing Obamacare was systematically targeting groups who came into existence because they opposed Obamacare, and that very targeting started March 2010, the month that Obamacare became law. And, of course, that agency is the Internal Revenue Service. They're the group in charge with enforcing this. So we really want to let this happen to the American people in light of what the IRS has done and in light of what everyone's saying and frankly, what we're now beginning to learn, what it's going to do to cost, what it's going to do to care. Again, just underscoring why this is so bad. I was with our daughter at an event yesterday, and I had a person just walk up to me out of the blue, and all the person said to me was, "Defund it, defund it." So it's something we got to focus on and figure out what's the best strategy to get that done here as we move into the fall.
Congressman, we're almost out of time here, up against a break. But will the leadership of the House, the GOP leadership, come along?
I think so. I mean, look, there are different strategic and strategies we can use to get there. And is it appropriate to go with the CR? Should we look at doing discretionary spending in the continuing resolution and some of the mandatory spending later on in the fall when we're dealing with the debt ceiling? There are different ways to look at this. What we're trying to figure out, what is the best strategy to delay this bill? Because we know it is not ready. I don't think it's ever going to be ready. And we got to look at different tactics, different strategies of how to get there, but that is certainly being discussed.
All right. Well, we're going to be right there with you because we believe it needs to be defunded as well. Congressman Jim Jordan, thanks so much for being with us.
We hope that you'll help Family Research Council continue to shed light on bad legislation like Obamacare as we fight for faith, family, and freedom here in Washington, D.C. You can find links to help you do just that when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be back right after this.
Should Christians get involved in politics or focus on evangelism? Historically, Christians have disagreed, but theologian and author Dr. Wayne Grudem has some answers in his new booklet titled, Why Christians Should Seek to Influence Government for Good. Dr. Grudem explores the history and theology of Christian public service and challenges us to be well-informed and vote wisely. So what will you do with the opportunity you've been given? To download your copy of this booklet, visit frc.org/Christian Influence.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Well, up next, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by retired Lieutenant Colonel and FRC staffer Bob McGinnis to talk about women in combat. Here's how Tony got that conversation started.
You may recall, we talked about this several times, but prior to leaving as Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta dropped a bombshell on his way out saying that they were moving forward with women in combat. Now, women have been, in the last decade, have been in combat situations, but they have not been in combat units. Well, that's all changing. The military, under the Obama administration, has been used as a mule for this president's radical social policy. I mean, you name it. I mean, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, now women in combat, religious liberty. The military is under assault by this administration. Well, a book was released by our colleague here at FRC, Senior Fellow for National Security here at FRC, Bob McGinnis. He is a retired Lieutenant Colonel with the United States Army, now serving as a senior strategist for the U.S. Army and national security issues. His book, Deadly Consequences, How Cowards Are Pushing Women into Combat. You can tell by the title he has some strong opinions on this. Joining us now to talk about it is Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. Bob, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, let's just start, you know, why'd you write the book?
Well, Tony, on the 24th of January, I was out of town, and I saw what Leon Panetta said, and I've been following these issues, writing about these issues for over 20 years, and I said, this is tragic what he's doing. He's not telling the American people the truth. In fact, Tony, you know, what I make the argument in the end of the book is that you've got equality argued by the feminists on one side. You have military readiness, how it's going to be damaged on the other. The question that ought to be asked is, what kind of country sends its women into ground combat, and do we want to be that type of country?
And but they always avoid those most revealing questions. They did the same thing with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They would not answer the question, how will this make our military better?
Absolutely, Tony. And as you know, I was 20 years in that battle. This one, though, I'm very, very concerned about, because the tip of the spear, the people in our military, the infantrymen, the special operations people, the people that eye to eye do the head smashing, the shooting at close range, the people that we depend upon in the military to do the tough stuff. That's what they want to compromise. They want to ruin, and they're willing to do it because of their policy goal, our overall effectiveness. I'm very concerned that, you know, this administration has advanced this radical agenda, that Congress is absolutely AWOL in this. There hasn't been a hearing in 34 years in the House of Representatives from the full Armed Services Committee and over 23 years in the Senate Armed Services Committee. Why aren't they, because of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, responsible and looking at this issue and asking these tough questions? But they aren't.
Bob, where's the military leadership in this? We're not hearing a whole lot from our nation's military leaders. Are they so, under the thumb of the Obama administration civilian leadership in the military, or what's the deal there?
Well, I refer to it as a cowardness of silence. These people are my peers. Age-wise, I went to school with Marty Dempsey. I went to school with Ray Odierno, who is the chief of staff of the Army. You know, in fact, I trained some of them. You know, they know what I know. What I've published is available in the open press. You know, these men are turning their backs on the truth. The American people, Tony, need to hear the truth about these issues. And the truth I chronicle based upon decades of research and a lot of interviews from privates to four-star generals in here, some of which wouldn't give me their name to publish, but they gave me their hearts. And I really go into some pretty gripping, not only descriptions of what ground combat is, but also I go into the science and what it's going to do to devastate our young women. And the latest crisis, as everybody's heard about, is the sexual assaults. Mm-hmm. You know, very few people understand that these types of units that we're talking about are very masculine units. And when we try to integrate these units with young women, we're going to compromise the really what I call the warrior spirit. Mm-hmm. Because young men have the physiology, the psychology, and this is science, this isn't Bob McGinnis, to do the fighting, and we know that. We've demonstrated that over a decade now. Unfortunately, these politicians are intimidating our brass, and our brass are allowing themselves to be so.
So in a way, Bob, is this then not emasculating the warrior culture, which has stood between us and the loss of our freedoms as a nation for 238 years?
Yeah, there's no question about that, Tony. They are emasculating the tip of the spear, and the feminists could care less. They're willing to diminish some of our fighting ability in order to have what they call a critical mass of women in infantry units. You know, Americans need to understand what the Obama administration has done has basically wiped away any reason for not drafting women in the future. Selective service is out the window as far as all male. It's going to be male and female. And as a direct result of that, I believe, based upon all the failed foreign policy of this administration, and of course the radical downsizing that we're now going through in terms of our armed forces, then in a couple of years, guess what? We're going to be drafting our young women into direct ground combat, and I don't think America is ready for that.
You know, Bob, unfortunately, I think you're right. What this administration has done to the military, you know, we've not yet seen the full consequences of their radical policy change in terms of its impact upon retention and recruitment. Now, anecdotally, we hear these stories, but we've not seen it yet in the numbers. I do think it's going to start popping up soon, and I think you're right. They'll have to rely upon a draft. And how are you going to not draft women when women now are supposedly playing the same role as men?
Absolutely, Tony. And not only that, you know, there are a lot of surveys. Women don't want to be in these positions. The active duty women that I talk to, those that have left the active duty, they said, no, that's not the place for women. Yeah, they want women to have opportunities. But the fact is, when we're talking about the radical differences in physiology and psychology and the mixing of 18 to 24-year-old men and women in forced intimate situations for periods, we have a sexual issue here as well. Moms and dads of America understand this, but yet those that are put in charge of the Pentagon are kind of poo-pooing this away, and the politicians could care less. Our country's true. And I say this with some reservation, but our country's future rests upon those that are willing to do the toughest jobs we ask them to do. The threats are real, and what we're doing to our military today is a disgrace to America.
Does this not make a dangerous job even more dangerous?
Oh, it does, of course. You know, if you've got 100 men in an infantry company, and I've been an infantry officer for a lot of years, and you insist that 30 of them have to be women. Women come in with half the upper body strength, about half the cardiovascular fitness. They can't walk as fast, march as fast, and they're not as risk takers.
Bob, just a second. That's not a chauvinistic statement.
No, that's science, Tony.
Right.
You know, and I chronicle the science in the book. You know, I quote the Army Institute of Research. I quote the Naval Research. I quote others. It's very, very plain. And I have physicians, you know, that made it all up to Rear Admiral that were advisors to past Chiefs of Naval Operation. We have the facts. The truth is on our side. And yet, those in the Pentagon are ignoring these realities. And we are going to blunt the very tip of the spear. And it's a very delicate organization, those people that do this tough fighting. And those are the very people that are being targeted now. It's not the logisticians. It's not the some of the others that are pushing the force to the front. It's the very tip of the spear. And if they don't want to fight, if they're unwilling to fight or lack the ability to do what is necessary, we're in trouble. We've had 19 moms that have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's of 141 moms that have been killed. You know, 38 children, 18 years old and younger. You know, 40% of the entire women population in the armed forces are moms today. You know, so what are we going to do? We're going to radically increase their chances of dying in combat. And most of those, a large part of them, are married to other service members. So it right. could be mom and dad are in war, yeah. and the kids are left behind with whom?
Yeah, yeah, good point. Folks can pick this up at bookstores?
Oh, yes. Barnes & Noble, as well as Amazon.com, and there are other places as well.
All right, and we've got a link to the publisher on our website, TonyPerkins.com, where you can order a copy. I encourage you to get this because this debate is really just beginning. We're pushing hard to make sure this is discussed on Capitol Hill. Bob, excellent work. Thanks for joining us, and thanks once again for standing up for what is true and what is right.
Well, thank you, Tony.
If you'd like to stand up alongside Bob and FRC, why don't you take a stand by ordering Bob's book and our brand new Take a Stand t-shirt. Both are available at TonyPerkins.com. And for more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, you can reach us by phone at 866-372-1212, or you can partner with us online at TonyPerkins.com. Washington Watch Weekly is sponsored by the Family Research Council.